I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, Health of the Holy Father. Pope Francis reaches the two-week mark in his stay at a Rome hospital, where the Vatican is saying about his condition. High-stakes talks. Ukrainian leader Volodymyr Zelensky visits the White House as President Trump seeks to find a peace deal with Russia. Next steps. What the future looks like between Israel and Hamas as phase one of the ceasefire wraps up. Plus, gather around the table. Catch up on all the events from today's National Catholic Prayer Breakfast. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, we are tracking a dramatic turn of events at the White House, where an Oval Office meeting between President Donald Trump and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky turned into a heated argument. And while there have been recent tensions, today's fiery exchanges that unfolded right on camera were definitely unexpected. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, good evening to you. After that Oval Office meeting, there was supposed to be a news conference in the East Room of the White House, but things really got heated in the Oval Office. We've got some highlights for you. Take a look.
Don't tell us what we're going to feel. We're trying to solve a problem. Don't tell us what we're going to feel.
I'm not telling you.
Because
I'm
you're in no position to dictate that.
That's
remember
exactly
this.
You're
in no position to dictate what we're going to feel. We're going to feel very good.
You will feel influenced.
We're going to feel very good and very strong.
You will feel influenced.
You're right now not in a very good position. You're playing cards. You're gambling with the lives of millions of people. You're gambling with World War III. You're gambling with World War III. And what you're doing is very disrespectful to the country, this country. That's backed
you
far more than a lot of people said they should have.
Have you said thank you once? This entire meeting? No, in this entire meeting, have you said thank you? You went to Pennsylvania and campaigned for the opposition in October. Offer some words of appreciation for the United States of America and the president who's trying to save your country.
But you see, I think it's good for the American people to see what's going on.
I
think it's very important. That's why I kept this going so long. You have to be thankful. You don't have the cards. You're buried there. You're people are dying. You're running low on soldiers.
Listen,
you're running low on soldiers. It would be a damn good thing. And then you tell us, I don't want a ceasefire. I don't want a ceasefire. I want to go, and I wanted this. Look, if you could get a ceasefire right now, I tell you, you take it so the bullets stop flying and your men stop getting killed.
Not long after, President Zelensky pulls away from the White House, the driveway packed with reporters who were expecting to see a news conference with the two leaders, but that did not happen.
Afterwards, on Truth Social, President Trump posted that Zelensky disrespected America and the Oval Office, but added Zelensky can come back when he's ready for peace. And as for that critical minerals deal that's been discussed for the last several weeks, well, not today. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Before that wild exchange of words, the Ukrainian president sat down with U.S. lawmakers. Sources tell EWTN News that the Ukrainian president discussed details of the mineral deal and the need for Congress to continue its funding to help support Ukraine fight. Now, both are in question. Let's check in with Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales for more. Eric.
Well, good evening, Tracy. Yes, the American public truly got a real-life, real-time view of diplomacy in action. Here on Capitol Hill, a majority of lawmakers are back at home in their districts, except for the few who attended the meeting with the Ukrainian president. After the exchange took place, reaction from U.S. lawmakers was quick and fell along party lines.
What we just witnessed was a meeting in the Oval Office between two cowardly puppets and a hero. And whether you voted for these puppets or not, just as an American, as a fellow American, it's just embarrassing.
Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota stated, quote, answer to Vance, Zelensky has thanked our country over and over again, both privately and publicly. And our country thanks him and the Ukrainian patriots who have stood up to a dictator, buried their own, and stopped Putin from marching right into the rest of Europe. Shame on you. Republicans are taking a much different view, applauding both President Trump and Vice President J.D. Vance. Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene posted on X, President Trump and Vice President Vance will put America first every single time. Putting Zelensky in his place while he disrespects the U.S. in the Oval Office is exactly what American leadership should look like. This is what we, the people, want to see. And Georgia Congressman Andrew Clyde posted on X, quote, President Trump and Vice President Vance are standing up for the American people. Our country will not be taken advantage of or disrespected. And Florida Senator Rick Scott says, gone are the days of President Biden's weak appeasement policies and global handouts. America is the greatest country in the world. No one gets to lecture our president in the Oval Office and disrespect America's generosity.
South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham, who actually did meet with Zelensky before the back and forth talk between him and Vance and Trump, he actually said he doesn't think that President Zelensky can work out a peace deal and he may not be the right man for the job. He also wonders if the relationship with President Trump can ever be repaired. Tracy, one thing's for sure, Russian President Vladimir Putin and the world are watching to see what happens next. Back to you.
Okay, thank you so much, Eric, and we are indeed. All right, now the Vatican announced this evening that the Holy Father's respiratory condition suddenly worsened today. Pope Francis has begun mechanical ventilation and is so far responding well to the treatment. EWTN Vatican News correspondent Colin Flynn has more.
Good evening, Tracy. The news tonight from the Vatican is concerning. After a few days of improvements, Pope Francis's condition worsened today as it was announced that he suffered from, quote, an isolated crisis of bronchospasm. The Holy See stated that this morning Pope Francis had respiratory physiotherapy. He prayed in the chapel and he received the Eucharist. But then at around 2 p.m., he suffered from, quote, an isolated crisis of bronchospasm. We're told that as a result of this, it led to the Holy Father vomiting with, quote, inhalation and a sudden worsening of the respiratory condition. Now, the Pope was then given non-invasive mechanical ventilation, which he responded well to. We're told this mechanical ventilation is with a mask covering the nose and mouth, and he continues to receive this treatment at the moment while he is resting. They also pointed out that at all times he was alert and well-orientated. Now, the doctors have said that they will need 24 to 48 hours to make an assessment of how today's episode will affect his clinical picture. And they added that at the moment, his situation remains complex and guarded. Well, that is the latest that we have here at the Vatican. In Rome, Colm Flynn for EWTN News Nightly.
And joining us now is Andreas Widmer, a former Pontifical Swiss Guard and associate professor in entrepreneurship with the Bush School of Business at the Catholic University of America. Andreas, great to be with you today. We, of course, have been covering the Holy Father's stay in the hospital extensively here on EWTN. Tell us, how is business handled at the Vatican while the Pope is ill?
I mean, these things are planned. The Pope isn't suddenly sick and everybody is surprised. Things are handled, everything is planned, and so when the Pope goes into the hospital, it's almost like if he would be traveling, there's contingency plans and people either go with him or stay in touch with him. I don't think there's a huge disruption of what he's doing between being there or being back at Santa Marta.
Yeah, I want to talk now about the Swiss Guard. Does the protocol change at all for protecting the Pope while he's in the hospital?
No, the protocol doesn't change. Just when he's traveling, he's a very well-protected man. And that is something that is just, it's of course not a daily occurrence if he goes to the hospital, but it is a daily occurrence that he would leave, he would go into another, on a travel or something like that. So the people that work there and work in his security are completely used to him being in other environments. And besides, the place he's in Gemelli Clinic is dedicated to him. And this is a known environment. So it's not like if he goes to a foreign nation or so. He has a place there that's dedicated to him, and that's a known environment.
Andreas, before I let you go, as a former Swiss Guard, what are you hearing from folks at the Vatican? What are they saying? And what is the mood right now?
So everybody is, of course, concerned. I do talk with a few of them, and they're concerned for his health, of course, just like the doctors. I think that gesture of starting to say the daily rosary at 9 o'clock in the evening is something that means a lot to everybody. And I know there's a lot of Swiss guards who participate in that when they're off duty. But there's also a lot of other stuff going around. What really hurts the guards is these kinds of rumors. They're very frustrated that these rumors are going around, like the Swiss guards are getting ready for the Pope to die, or that what is it? Like I saw it in the news that they're practicing for his funeral. Anybody who knows anything about the Vatican is going to just know right away that that's not true. That's complete, you know, news generation. The Swiss guards don't have to pray to practice for a mass or for a funeral. That's what they do for a living. That's just something that they do every day. And so these are totally unfounded things. And the Swiss guards feel very bad when their name is being used in a news cycle like that. And I think that's frustrating to them because they like to just stay in the background and help provide the safety for the public.
Well, Andreas, thank you so much for speaking to us about all this. We appreciate it. God bless you.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Well, in other news, back here in the United States, hundreds of workers at the National Weather Service have lost their jobs. Those who had been working for the agency for less than a year got a letter this week saying that their performance has not been adequate. U.S. meteorologists may feel an impact as they rely on the data released by the NWS to create their forecasts. More layoffs are expected. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including huge protests in Greece on the anniversary of a tragedy that has become a symbol of government failure. And what's next for Israel and Hamas as phase one of the ceasefire wraps up. Welcome back. A state in Mexico recently decriminalized abortion for up to 12 weeks of pregnancy. Now church leaders are responding. The head of the Diocese of Campeche says any Catholic who took part in the passing of the legislation and who now participates in an abortion will be excommunicated. Campeche is the 21st state in Mexico to decriminalize abortion. Well, the first phase of the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas is set to expire this weekend. Obligations for this part of the agreement have been met as families reunite with their loved ones in Gaza. Meantime, Egypt says intensive discussions are taking place about the next phase of the ceasefire. Israeli officials say they will now withdraw from a corridor along the Gaza Strip, which could spark a conflict. All right, now to Pakistan, where a suicide bomber killed six worshippers during Friday prayers at an Islamic seminary. Among the killed is the head of the religious school. The attacker, wearing an explosive-laden suicide vest, walked up to the cleric as he was leaving the mosque. No group has immediately claimed responsibility. Thousands of protesters flooded cities and towns across Greece. They are demanding justice on the second anniversary of the country's deadliest train crash. According to a report released yesterday, the safety gaps that caused the crash have not been addressed and no one has been convicted. The public is angry over delays in the inquiry and have accused the government of a cover-up, claims that officials strongly deny. A new article says the Catholic bishops are right to sue the federal government over refugee resettlement. Writing in the National Review Online, author Mary Fiorito says in part, quote, "The Catholic Church's mission is to assist legally admitted refugees is clear and convincing, even if the government will no longer continue to support that program financially. The people in the pews and people of goodwill should have no qualms." This comes as the Supreme Court temporarily paused an order from a lower court directing the White House to pay roughly $2 billion in foreign aid grants to nonprofit organizations. Numerous Catholic entities have been affected by the freeze, though the church was not involved with the suit at issue in the ruling. And for more, we turn now to Ashley McGuire, senior fellow at the Catholic Association, which has been following this story very closely. Ashley, great to be with you. Remind us again of the lawsuit filed by the U.S. bishops against the Trump administration, and where do things stand now?
Sure. So the bishops are suing over loss of funding for a program that they have partnered with the government, with the federal government, for 45 years. There's been a law in place that allows for nonprofits to work with them to help resettle refugees who have been vetted and are legally allowed to enter this country. The bishops have been working with them on that and lost that funding and are suing for restoration of that funding. My understanding is that a judge refused to grant an injunction, so they are now headed to arbitration, and there was a hearing today, so I think we'll find out more soon.
Yeah. That article by your colleague Mary Fiorito really makes an interesting point about the distinction between immigrants who arrive through the U.S. Refugee Admissions Program and, of course, those who come here illegally. Let's talk more about that.
Yeah, I think this is a very important distinction, because what's at issue and what's at stake in this lawsuit is the bishops, through Catholic Charities, work helping to resettle refugees who are here legally. The federal government has said you can be here, and they're asking for help. There's numerous other nonprofits that help them do that work to resettle those refugees with stability and with dignity. It's a really worthwhile program, and unfortunately, there's just a lot of misunderstandings about what that entails, but those are the facts.
Yeah. Ashley, how do you see this all playing out? And are there areas where the USCCB and the Trump administration can really come together and have an agreement?
Absolutely. I mean, really, there's a lot of alignment. I just came from the National Catholic Prayer Breakfast this morning, where you had the vice president saying we're going to be the biggest defenders of religious liberty. And the bishops have been staunch defenders of religious liberty. There's the issue of the sanctity of life. I mean, the Trump administration has reiterated again and again that they stand for that, and they're going to advance those sorts of policies. And also, this is an administration that has said the prioritization of families is something that's central. And again, you know, the Catholic Church is, I think, the greatest defender of the rights of families. So there certainly is a lot of alignment, and my hope is that that we'll have more, not less, of that.
Ashley, thank you so much for weighing in. We appreciate it. God bless.
Thank you. Thanks.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, a love story will reveal the secret behind the world's longest marriage, plus a message of hope from today's National Catholic Prayer Breakfast. So what comes after a 75th wedding anniversary? Well, a couple in Brazil may just have the answer. Take a look at Manuel and Maria with 84 years of marriage. Can you believe that? The couple has set the Guinness World Record for the longest current marriage. God bless them. Their daily tradition includes listening to the rosary on the radio and then watching Mass. They have 13 children, 55 grandchildren, 54 great-grandchildren, and 12 great-great-grandchildren. God bless them. They are beautiful. Well, finally tonight, the 20th National Catholic Prayer Breakfast took place earlier today in the nation's capital. Nearly 1,500 church leaders and lay people gathered for an annual event focused on faith, fellowship, and food.
And even in difficult times, this breakfast has remained a beacon of hope and joy, a light in the darkness. And so we find ourselves here once more, looking out at a world often fraught with uncertainty, division, and fear. The temptation to despair is great, and yet we are not a people of fear.
To all of you, please know the spiritual closeness of the Holy Father, Pope Francis. He cares for the people of this country, and he values our unity with him in faith and in hope.
Our Lady Guadalupe, pray for us. God bless America, God bless Mexico, God bless the world. Viva Estados Unidos, viva, viva México, viva, viva Cristo Rey, viva la Virgen de Guadalupe, Dios los bendiga.
I met with the Secretary General of the UN, Gutierrez, in my office. I meet with him frequently. And while talking, I said, you know, they said the UN is all in disseminating the abortion pill all over Africa and all over the world. I said, do you know how it works? It starves the baby to death. He didn't know, his staff didn't know, or at least they put on an air that they didn't know. I said, you and I, Mr. Secretary General, worked very, very hard on world hunger mitigation. How could you now turn around and starve to death people who are in the womb.
And I think that it's important, and I'll make this commitment to you in front of God and in front of all those television cameras back there, that we will always listen to people of faith and people of conscience in the United States of America. You have an open door to the Trump administration, even and especially maybe when you disagree with us. There was something really amazing that happened to me in November of 2024. All my friends were there, all my family was there. We were gathered together in a great moment of celebration. And of course, I'm talking about when my 7-year-old chose to be baptized into the Christian faith. And
the keynote address this morning came from Monsignor James Shea from the University of Mary in North Dakota. His remarks included references to the 1990s movie The Shawshank Redemption and even singer Taylor Swift. Afterwards, he sat down with Dr. Matthew Bunsen and me to talk more about his message of hope. And Monsignor James Shea joins us now. Monsignor, great to see you.
Good to be with you this morning. What an amazing day, the National Catholic Prayer Breakfast.
It's been absolutely incredible. Ooh. And also incredible, your remarks today, your keynote speech. Mm. Really captivating. You talked about the movie Shawshank Redemption. You focused on hope. Yeah. And I took a couple of notes here. The only person that can read them is me. It's scribble here. But one thing that really stood out is you said that hope is the anchor for our lives.
Well, the letter to the Hebrews, the scriptures, the New Testament tells us that, and that without hope, human beings become miserable and unhappy creatures. And so we need hope, because hope grounds us in ultimate realities. We are immortal beings with eternal destinies. And small hopes, hopes with a small h, cannot hold the weight of our immortality. Instead, we really need that ultimate hope, which is the fact that God has saved us and that we're destined for heaven.
And the letter to the Hebrews also, of course, has a beautiful discourse on faith.
Yes.
Talk about something, a point that you made in your presentation today on this sort of return to faith that we're seeing in culture. Certainly the Pew study is indicating that, but you're seeing it on the ground.
Right. Well, so my reference to the Pew study was that we're not going to need it on Ash Wednesday. Of course, it's helpful to know, but on Ash Wednesday, everybody can see it. It's palpable, to include on the campus of the University of Mary. I mean, on the ground, when you say on the ground, for me, it means you work with university students. And at a place like the University of Mary or any other of the faithful Catholic colleges throughout the country, you can see that the church is alive and well, and that the future of the church is secure, that the Holy Spirit is working and moving through the lives and hearts of young people. Because young people, it's interesting, when we grow older and crotchety, you know what I mean, when we reach middle age or beyond,
curmudgeons.
Yes. we can become very gloomy about things.
Yeah.
and think that, you know, the world is in constant deterioration and all of those things. But by acting that way and speaking that way, we do a great disservice to our young people, because they're in this moment. Dante Alighieri says that there's a certain point in life, a season of life, in which we have a stupor of wonder about what our lives are going to be. And we're on the search, we're on the hunt for meaning and purpose. And the Catholic faith offers that in a way that nothing else can. And so for us to be joyful, cheerful warriors in the midst of a difficult world or cultural situation is so important to us. The revival of faith depends upon people of faith believing that it's worth it to live as though the gospel is really true. I was at a conference last year in England, and there was a speaker there who said one of the most extraordinary things. She was speaking about marriage and the family, and she said that a Catholic family is called to live in such a way that if the gospel is not true, their life together doesn't make any sense. This, to me, was just perfect.
It was perfect. Hope and prayer, and we are gathered here today. Yeah. What an incredible event to be here with all of the faithful together and really praying, not just for the church, not for the United States, but right now for our Holy Father.
Yes, of course. So first, with the National Catholic Prayer Breakfast, I would say this. When you look around, it is as it was described at the beginning. It's a reunion of Catholic America. All kinds of amazing people are here, and then all of us too.
Yes.
It's really an extraordinary thing. And we were united this morning in prayer, as we've been for weeks now, for our Holy Father, for his health, for his healing. And to surround him with our prayer and our affection is also an exercise of hope. one of the things that struck me as I was preparing for my talk this morning is that when someone we love, when the Holy Father or a member of our family or a close friend is suffering and struggling in this way, we begin to have thoughts about about our own mortality and about how fragile life is. And as a result, that's a moment for us to truly exercise hope, to know that our happiness is not in this world. It's not secured by the things of this world, that our happiness ultimately is the kingdom of heaven and eternal life.
And we are a family, and he is our Father.
Yes.
He sure is. So we're praying for him with all our hearts.
Yeah.
We are.
Definitely.
Well, thank you so much, Monsignor Shea.
Oh, it's a joy to be with you. Thanks to you, and thanks to EWN for covering and for sponsoring this amazing gathering of faith.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.